Howdy, everybody, and welcome back to our podcast on stats for the social sciences. We are barreling towards the end of this course. We have two more podcasts, including this one, on course material. And after that, we'll simply be doing any sort of conversations or discussions you'd like to have around review or preparation for the final exam. Today, I'm also going to talk about those final paper assignments that you have and anything that's in place for those in terms of your needed data analysis. So, without any further ado, let's get right to it because we don't have a terribly long episode today. Our discussion is going to be around the topic of what is known as ANOVA, or Analysis of Variance. You can, of course, find these slides when you make your way to Canvas on the Week 13 Roadmap page. And once you have those pulled up and available to you, you will see this is really just extending our conversation about t-tests. So t-tests, testing two groups, or the same group at two different times. Really, the point being t is for two here. So two groups, two different times. But what about when we have more than two groups? Let's say I want to compare freshmen and sophomores and juniors and seniors at Wayne State College. Well, I can't do that with a t-test, but I can with an ANOVA, the Analysis of Variance test. So we're going to talk about those today, two different types of ANOVAs. The one way, where I'm looking at one specific thing about my multiple groups that I'm comparing, and factorial, where it's I'm looking at more than one thing. So maybe two different, three different variables from more than two groups, and how does each group stack up against the others, and are they really different? The test we're going to do for an ANOVA is called an F-test, and we're going to look at that a little bit. We're going to extend our discussion around degrees of freedom that we started under t-tests because that comes into play with an ANOVA as well, and it gets a little more complicated because we don't just have two groups, so we have to do kind of a multi-level version of degrees of freedom. And then I'm going to talk through some more on SPSS Assignment 3. This is actually the set of slides that will wrap up the final question on that assignment. So once you've worked your way through this material, you should be all ready to close that one out. And then the last little bit of today, talking about, as I noted before, the final papers and what you need to have for your findings and results sections in those papers, which is really your data analysis. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Let's begin with what is an ANOVA. Slide 4 spells out it's just an extension of a t-test, like I said before. So we're comparing 3 groups, 4 groups, 10 groups, 12 groups. We can do all of this with the ANOVA process in SPSS. What is being calculated in that ANOVA is this F-test ratio on slide 4. It's the variance between the groups over the variance within the groups, which is very much the same kind of formula as what we saw last week when I talked through what's the standardized approach to, let's say, z-scores or one-sample tests or t-tests. It's the difference between the groups divided by the variance within the groups. But in an ANOVA, we're actually comparing the variance between the groups to the variance within the groups. We don't have a simple difference to look at here. We have to know whether the, let's say, gaps we see between the groups are really that big compared to the gaps within those groups. Just another way of talking about variance and range. Again, that's all I'm considering here is how different is each group from one another versus how different are the groups internally among their own members. Now, these F-tests can be used in two ways. What I noted before, a one-way ANOVA, which is called a simple ANOVA, one measure. So I have 4 groups of students and I want to know if they're different on GPA. That would be a one-way ANOVA, one thing that I'm measuring them on, that I'm comparing all of the groups on that one thing. But if I've got a bit of a more complicated question where I want to look at more than one thing and compare the groups, maybe not just GPA, but time studied or what are the different amounts of, let's say, homework for each group, or how much are they practicing, let's say, I can do all of those measures using a factorial ANOVA. There are some parts here that get a little more confusing when you start to use SPSS to run these functions. So in the t-test realm, what you'd be doing is opening SPSS, going to analyze, and then compare means and proportions, and choosing an independent samples t-test if you have two truly separate groups, and a paired samples t-test if you have one group that you're comparing at two times. Now, from that same set of commands that analyze, compare means, and proportions, you see the one-way ANOVA. So if you have to do this for your final paper, this is where you find that. But confusingly, what we're going to do for a factorial ANOVA is move one step down to analyze general linear model, and then you choose the univariate option. Okay, so in this structure for SPSS, compare means and proportions covers your t-tests, your one sample test, and your one-way ANOVA. But if you had an ANOVA with multiple levels to it, multiple factors, you're going to be using the general linear model with the univariate option. On slide 5, you get a bit more of a visual presentation of this. Our one-way and factorial is at the top of this, so it works kind of the reverse of a decision tree, but it's giving more explanation for each one. With the one-way ANOVA, we have one independent variable, or one way we're separating out our groups. Again, like class level, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, that's our independent variable that we think is affecting something else, like GPA or amount of time that they're studying, or maybe even the amount of homework that they have. Those would all actually be considered dependent variables. But if I have a factorial ANOVA, I'm separating my groups in more than one way. So it wouldn't just be freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. I might also be separating out female students and male students. Or I might make things even more complicated, where I'm saying it's not just about your level in school, but maybe it's about the college that you're in. So if you're taking something in the physical sciences, you might see a fundamentally different GPA or study time or amount of homework than if you're in arts and humanities. Just something to put out there that might be important things we need to separate the groups on. And in case we're separating the groups on multiple things, we're going to be doing a factorial ANOVA. Now that's more than a little confusing at times, so I want you to step back and think about that. And then I want you to look at what's listed on slide 7. Skip slide 6 for just a heartbeat, and go to slide 7 for what the factorial ANOVA looks like when we visualize it. We're separating into two different factors, or two different ways for this example, girls and boys, and the music genre that they are preferring, or maybe they're playing, rock, classic, and jazz. That gives us 6 independent groups. Whereas with my example before, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, if I also add in male and female students, I have 8 different groups. Freshman female, freshman male, sophomore female, sophomore male, junior female, junior male, senior female, senior male. Yes, I did literally just do that to you, but that's the illustration I want to give for factorial ANOVA. Okay, let's boomerang back to slide 6. This is simply saying we're going to visually present what an ANOVA comparison is. And for them, they're saying the between group variation, that variation across the groups, is actually looking at all of the differences of the group means. This is back to that standard formula. But we're not just comparing two groups, right? We have to compare all of the means to one another. So we end up with 3 different comparisons. And that means we're actually looking at more of the variation between the means. And then we look at that in comparison to the picture on the right-hand side of slide 6, the within-group variation. How spread are each of our groups, the blue, the yellow, and the gray, versus the differences between the means for the blue and the yellow and the gray. All right, at this point, I'm going to take us down a bit of a technical rabbit hole that I want to make very clear. You do not need to fully know or be able to explain for the final exam. But it truly is how we calculate what's known as that F-test, or the F-ratio. To do this, we have to do what's known as sum of squares, because we're finding differences, and then we're going to have to square them to offset any negative numbers. This should sound familiar. This is exactly what we end up doing with a standard deviation, where we have to take the mean and subtract it from all of the values in a data set, right? You can end up with negative values and positive values, and in fact, you should. If you're subtracting the mean, if you were to add all those values together without squaring them, without taking out the negative and positive offsets, they're gonna total to zero. That's how it should work mathematically. So we square the differences in order to avoid getting to that zero point. So for an F test, we have three different sums of squares that we're using to calculate the total F test. The first is that between groups. So looking at the means, we add the differences between all of the means, adding all the differences between the mean of all scores and the mean of each group's score, okay? And then we square it so that we don't have any negative numbers there. That's going to give us, if you dance between slides 8 and 9, the 91.467 listed there, the between groups sum of squares. Then we're going to calculate the within groups sum of squares, right? This is the variance within each group. Add the differences between each individual score in a group and the mean of each group, and then square it. This is getting the variance, right? Just straight variance. That's going to be the within groups sum of squares on slide 9, 276.4. Then we get the total sum of squares, adding the between groups and the within groups, literally just adding these two numbers together, which on slide 9 is this 367.867. If you add 91.467 plus 276.4, it gives you 367.867. That is what we're doing and using to eventually calculate our F ratio, our F test value. Now I want you to totally hone in on slide 9. What we're doing with the math here is actually reading from left to right at this point in time. And if I take 91.467 and I divide by the 2 in the DF column to the right of it, I get 45.733. So 91.467 divided by 2 equals 45.733. That's my mean square value in the middle column on the between groups line. Same thing if I do for the within groups, 276.4 divided by 27 gives me 10.237 in the mean square column on the row with the within groups calculation. So we've taken our sum of squares for between groups divided by the degrees of freedom for between groups, and then our sum of squares within groups and divided by the degrees of freedom for the within groups, and we end up with our values of 45.733 and 10.237. And now the math gets even a little bit more twisty in terms of the way it's calculated, but if you take 45.733 divided by 10.237, that gives you the F value of 4.467. So we take our sum of squares, we end up using that to calculate the mean square, and that mean square, the between goes on top of our fraction, the within goes on the bottom, and that leads us to our F ratio. Again, 45.733 divided by 10.237 gives us an F ratio or F test value of 4.467. Think of this again like a t-test or a z-score on a normal distribution. 4.467 is going to be pretty far out in the tails based on that significance that you see just to the right of it in the last orange rectangle on this slide. The sig here is what is used for p-value. This is confusing, I know, but in SPSS, they will use interchangeably or alternating with one another sig and p-value. You should interpret them the same way. The sig is the chances of getting this result if our null hypothesis is true, right? That would be 0.021. And in this instance, 0.021 is less than 0.05. So here we'd say we reject the null hypothesis because 0.02 is less than 0.05. And that is our significance level for pretty much everything we do in social statistics. If we were doing the full 5 steps, we'd have our null hypothesis spelled out with these groups. Then we'd set our significance level at 0.05. We'd run the ANOVA in SPSS. Then we'd look at these results and say, okay, 0.021, my sig value from my ANOVA results is below 0.05, so therefore I reject the null. If it was above 0.05, let's say 0.08, I would accept my null hypothesis. Slide 10 is a different way of presenting, let's say, what would be a large versus a small F test. So visually, if we had groups that were very similar to one another, that would look like the small F test score. Do you see how each distribution overlaps pretty heavily with the others? And our means of 9, 10, 11, they're very close to each other. So in this case, we probably wouldn't say that the groups are different. In fact, they look like they overlap so heavily, we would probably conclude that. It's going to depend, of course, on the significance for that F test score. But just looking at the picture on the left-hand side for slide 10, those groups are pretty similar. And so we're not going to likely find that there's something separating them out, or whatever factor is separating them is making a big difference. But the picture on the right, those three groups do not overlap much. I mean, look at the blue and the green distributions. They barely overlap at all. So we're probably going to find that these groups with means of 6 and 10 and 14 are going to be significantly different from one another. And that's what you're doing with an ANOVA, is whatever we're using to separate the groups, that factor, that thing that we think is affecting the groups, is it really making a difference? And if so, we're going to see these groups not overlap very much. Slide 11 is just going to present for you, yet again, the same steps of the testing process. And just as before, we're going to use those same cutoffs that I literally talked through in the last example. We're going to give the null. We're going to set our level of significance at 0.05. We're going to run the test in SPSS, find the results, and then we're going to specifically look in the p-value area of the table or the sig column for that number. And if that number is below 0.05, we're going to reject the null hypothesis. If it's above, we're going to accept it. And remember, going back to the null is always going to be saying there is no difference between our groups, or there is no, let's say, effect of our independent variable on our dependent variable. With one sample, t-test, and ANOVA groups, whatever we're using to separate out the groups is what we'd think of as our independent variable. So in my examples from before, it's class level, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. But for any number of you, it could be totally different factors. Maybe it's children in foster care versus not in foster care. Or let's say veterans versus non-veterans, drug users versus non-drug users. Any number of ways we can separate out groups is actually thinking of an independent variable in a certain way. So think about how you're doing your comparisons and understand that these simple tests are just saying, okay, if we compare those two groups to one another, are they really that different? And if they are, we can reject the null hypothesis. Otherwise, we got to go ahead and accept it and say, maybe they're not that different. Maybe this is possibly due to chance. Now, let's say I'm being tremendously cruel and making you manually look up the critical value for an F test. So it's like using those tables in Appendix B where I say, okay, what Z-score do you have to get to be past 0.05? Or what t-test value do you have to get for, let's say, 10 degrees of freedom on a two-tailed test with a significance at the 0.05 level? Those critical values are basically the ones we need to exceed. We need to be more extreme than that number. So in any instance where I ask you to do it manually, you'd simply use the table to look up the number that goes with that type of test, one-tailed or two-tailed, whatever significance level we have. And then for t-tests and ANOVAs, we'd also need to know those degrees of freedom. That helps to place us in the table in the right spot to know which critical value we're dealing with. Well, for F-tests, we have added a level of complexity with those degrees of freedom. You'll see this listed on slide 12. We actually have 2 degrees of freedom. The first is the number of groups minus 1, literally the groups calculated, total groups. So if I have 3 groups, it's 3, and I subtract the number 1 for 2. That would give me 2 degrees of freedom for the between groups. So you'll see in the table, if I flash back to slide 9, my DF, my degrees of freedom for between groups, is calculated as 2 there, meaning I actually have 3 groups that I'm comparing. I simply add 1 to that to figure out how many total groups I have. If I had 4 groups, the value would be 3, 4 minus 1. And this is exactly the same way we calculated the degrees of freedom for the t-tests. But what complicates f-tests is now we have to think about our entire sample size in addition to the number of groups that we're comparing. So the bottom or denominator degrees of freedom, or in other words, the degrees of freedom that I would use for the within groups calculation, is the total number of everyone in all of my groups minus the number of groups. The example I've given here is, let's say I have 4 groups of 25 people. Well, 25 times 4 is 100, and then I subtract 4 from that number. It's the total number in my entire sample minus the number of groups, which gives me 96. And I would list those degrees of freedom in the parentheses like you see on slide 12, 3, 96. I have 4 groups, so my between groups degrees of freedom is 4 minus 1, or 3. And then I have in each group 25 total people, 4 times 25 is 100, minus 4, the total minus the number of groups, for 96. I can assure you that you will not be manually looking up any F-test critical values for this course. We will simply not do that. It is too complex a process. We can do it using the tables in our textbook, but I certainly couldn't get you to 96 degrees of freedom for the number within your sample. So rather than test this out or challenge ourselves with that process, we're simply going to know it would work, like what we do with a t-test, but we'd have to look up first our degrees of freedom for both the between groups, or the one on top, the numerator, and the within groups, or the number on bottom, the denominator. Okay, yeah, I realize that's a lot. That's kind of a brain-fryingly level amount of complexity to talk about with degrees of freedom. But really, what you need to know is, if I were to ask a question on how to calculate those degrees of freedom, how do you do it? And that's what you should focus on. How do we calculate the degrees of freedom, as well as how would I read it in SPSS results? So going back to my SPSS results, again, looking at slide 9, I have 3 groups. And because I know I have 3 groups, I would add 27 and 3 for my total number in my sample, which gives me 30, right? 30 total in my sample, and it's 3 groups, probably 3 groups of 10. So 27 plus 3 gives me my total number in my sample. If your head is swimming right now, please take a break. Come up for air, do some revision, rewalking through the slides, and make sure you're feeling pretty solid before you continue on, because we're going to complicate this further by talking about effect size and then how do we know which group is really different. Our F ratio, or our F test value, is just telling us, is the difference between these groups real, right? Is it not due to chance? What we mean when we say statistical significance. So if they are statistically significant, as in they're actually different from one another, well, how do we know how big that difference is? Is it a small difference between my freshmen, my sophomores, and my juniors, and my seniors, or is it a really big difference? And how do I know which group really is that different? Because maybe some of them are alike and some of them are truly different. Well, let's do part 1 of that first, effect size. We've used Cohen's D, listed on slide 13, for t-tests. For an ANOVA, we would use what is called eta, or eta squared, symbolized as kind of like this lowercase n with a long leg on the front end of it. That's the proportion of variance explained by the independent variable. That's, again, how much do you actually explain about the changes between the groups, or the differences, excuse me, between the groups versus what's going on within each group? Well, we calculate this by taking our between group sum of squares divided by the total group sum of squares. The differences between over the total differences within. And if we have a small effect size, that ratio, that fraction really, is going to be 0.01. If it's a medium effect size, it's 0.06. And if it's a large effect size, it's going to be something like 0.14 or greater. So if I take my numbers right now from this screen, that 91.467, and I divide by the 367.867, my eta value, my eta squared, is 0.248. What effect size would we classify that as? Is it small? Is it medium? Or is it large? Shoot me your answer when you have a chance and when you've reached this point in the podcast. Okay, I do hope you emailed me with your response to that. But if not, seriously, hit pause, look at what the effect size is and compare it to those numbers, right? What kind of effect size are we seeing? Are these groups not just not different by chance, but are they really different in terms of the effect that whatever we're looking at is having on each group? Which actually leads us to our next question. Let's say we have four groups. Maybe three of them are very similar, and it's just the fourth group that's really different. Well, how do I know that? I've only got something that's telling me that the groups are different and that there's maybe a significant effect, but it's not pointing out which group truly is different. Well, at this point, what we need to do are what is known as post hoc tests, okay? I think I actually used the English totally wrong in describing that right there, but post hoc tests are what we do to figure out, okay, which one is truly significantly different? And honestly, y'all, we really do have to rely on SPSS for this. It is a lot of comparing. It's a lot of calculation. So we're not going to necessarily say, we're going to do this by hand, which is great. Post hoc tests can be any number of forms. I'm going to specifically ask you on the last question for SPSS assignment 3 to do what's known as a Tukey's B. And you heard me correctly. It's not turkeys, although it's spelled almost the same way minus the R, a Tukey's B, which is going to compare the means for each group to one another to say, okay, which group is really different? Something similar, actually exactly the same, that Tukey's calculation, although it's the Tukey's HSD versus Tukey's B, is shown for you on slide 15. And what you can see here is, let's say we're comparing courses, the beginner and the intermediate and the advanced. The first row is contrasting the beginner course versus the intermediate, and then versus the advanced. You see the next column, mean difference, I minus J. Well, when the I course is beginner and it's subtracting intermediate, we have a difference of 3.6. Seems pretty significant. That's quite a change in the mean, perhaps. We'd say that that was significant. And we could look to the right-hand side under SIG to see, okay, is this really significantly different or not? And that SIG value being 0.05 or less would say, yep, these two things are different. Now look at the beginner minus advanced. The value is 3.8. And our SIG here is 0.034, which is less than 0.05. So beginner to advanced is, again, significantly different. We repeat the process with each of the groups. So we start with beginner against the other two, then we go to intermediate against the other two, and then we go to advanced against the other two, following those rows in the first column. When we compare intermediate to beginner, we see the negative 3.6, which is just the same value as what we saw up above, but flipped because it's now the intermediate minus the beginner. So we've gone from positive to negative. But look at intermediate versus advanced. The difference here is only 0.2. And our SIG is 0.989. So what we can conclude is the intermediate course is not different from the advanced, at least as far as the mean, but it is different from the beginner class. And we repeat this with the advanced down at the bottom. Advanced versus beginner, negative 3.8. Again, it's just the flip of the one you saw above, the 3.8. It's now negative rather than positive. But against the intermediate, negative 0.2. Again, our SIG is 0.989. We can actually tell from this table that the beginner course is significantly different from the intermediate and advanced courses, but intermediate and advanced, not really different from one another. You'll also see here, there's little stars next to the 3.6 and the 3.8, or negative 3.6 and negative 3.8. There's a line beneath the table, the star saying the mean difference is significant at the 0.05 level. This is another way that the table tells you these groups really are different, at least when we're looking at the beginner course versus the other two. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we are done with talking about new material for ANOVAs and F-tests and how we can interpret all of the results in SPSS. So at this time, what I'm going to encourage you to do is follow through on the next couple of slides to do a check-in for understanding. We have 6 tests listed. On slide 17, there's tests 1 through 3, and on slide 18, there's tests 4 through 6. I'd like you to simply answer each question and send me what you come up with. So question one, I have a Z-score of 1.8 and I'm using a one-tailed test. If I have chosen a significance level of 0.05, is my Z-score extreme enough to reject the null hypothesis? Extreme enough meaning bigger than a positive number, that's my cutoff, or lesser than a negative number, that's my cutoff, right? We're going to be practicing with test one how we look up those critical values. Test two is also going to be somewhat of that, but we're now going to introduce comparing our critical value with our test statistic. The test statistic in test two is 1.85. So what are we going to compare that to know if we should reject the null hypothesis? Test two is actually asking you to do manually the critical value figuring out and comparing with the test statistic. We're not just comparing to 0.05 here. Same for test three. And tests one and two are going to be asking you to do the one sample test. But tests 4 through 6 are going to push you into t-test realm, right? You can see at the top, z-tests is listed for slide 17 and t-tests for slide 18. So tests 4 through 6 are all about comparing two groups. And again, manually figuring out what is my critical value versus what is my test statistic. Anytime you see in the description that you have a test score of a certain number, like 2.02, that is your test statistic. Anytime the question is asking you for what critical value you need, you're going to be looking it up in the table. So I want you to take the time to practice this. Get more familiar with it. Again, this is what we'd be doing outside of SPSS if we had to do this on our own. I can assure you there will be at least one question on the exam which is going to ask you to kind of walk through that process, but it won't be in the same kind of structure as this where I'm asking you to fully look it up. If there's anything to look up, you will absolutely have the chance to do so using the sources on the exam. It's similar to what was on the midterm for the Z-score test question. Once you've completed that check-in for understanding and let me know where you're at, I'd say jump right in to finishing SPSS assignment 3. Pay attention to the extra parts of the final question, which is about doing the ANOVA process, and then in particular, the post hoc tests. When you get into SPSS and you need to do a post hoc test, let's say I'm analyzing with a one-way ANOVA, then it's going to ask me, or it's going to have an option for me with post hoc tests as an actual button. When you do the one-way ANOVA function, it has a box for your dependent list or your dependent variable. It has a box for your factor or how you're separating out your groups. And then on the right-hand side, you have the contrasts option, the post hoc option, the options option, and the bootstrap button. When you click on post hoc, it's going to give you a bunch of different checkboxes you can select. For the last part of question, the fourth question on SPSS assignment 3, you need to check the box for Tukey's B. And that will do the calculations you need to answer the last part of that question. Okay, on to the final little bit of what we need to talk about in this episode. We have quite a few assignments still remaining. You can see on slide 20, we've got discussion 13 and quiz 6 coming up on November 16th. That's when those are due. Discussion 14 and that actual SPSS assignment 3 is due just before we are off for the Thanksgiving break. That's November 23rd. And then quiz 7 and the final research paper as well as SPSS assignment number 4 are all due December 7th. So you'll notice there's a pretty big gap there. You have 2 weeks between the last discussion and SPS assignment 3 and when your final quiz, your final research paper, and the last SPSS assignment are due. Then, at the very end of this course, we have our final exam, which is due for all of you in the online course by midnight on December 11th. That final exam will work the same way as the midterm did. Once you open it up, you will have a 2-hour window instead of just an hour and 15 minutes because it's going to mimic what would be happening in the in-class setting. The 2-hour window must be completed and closed by midnight on December 11th, and you'll have 3 sections to the exam, so you'll be answering 1 question for each section. I'll get into this more again next time because I want to go back to that final research paper. For each of your final research papers, you must include actual descriptive statistics calculated in SPSS, as well as inferential statistics or tests conducted in SPSS. Many of you contacted me to ask for a fake data set, and those will be available to you starting on Monday, November 10th, on the final paper data sets and instructions page. This page is listed under the Week 16 module or on the Week 16 roadmap page, but I'm going to include it in an announcement so that you see it before that point in time. The final research paper or the final paper data sets and instructions page is going to have, first of all, any fake data sets that I've created for you to complete the paper successfully. If you did not ask for a fake data set, you will be required to produce an actual raw data file that you need to send to me in addition to your paper. I'm fully happy to continue creating fake data sets for you if you need them. Without that data set, you cannot successfully complete the findings and results section of the paper or the conclusions, which is going to lose a lot of points if you don't have that. For anyone who has a true fake data set, you'll go to that page for final paper data sets and instructions. Your data set will be linked under the data sets by last name section. It's the bottom section of that page. And then there will be an instructions section in the middle. The inferential statistics instructions for final papers will spell out for each person exactly what you need to do in the final paper. It will be for the inferential statistics section, as in what tests do you need to complete. Everyone needs to include descriptive statistics for their sample. So for those descriptive statistics, I have included a document called Descriptive Statistics Instructions for the Final Papers. Everyone needs to include either frequencies that are detailed on pages 1 and 2 or crosstabs that are detailed on pages 2 and 3. You'll use frequencies for any of your data that's number-based, as in we measure it using numbers, and you'll use crosstabs for any important variables that are identified using words, or it's called a string variable in SPSS. I've included pictures there for how to generate those things. So you go to Analyze, Descriptive Statistics, and then you choose Frequencies, or you choose Crosstabs, and then you select your variables. Crosstabs is going to produce tables. Cross-tabulations is what that stands for. So you'll see at the bottom of page 3 on those descriptive statistics instructions, it'll separate out by groups and the way each group has been labeled with words. If you do frequencies, you're going to have more like what we saw in our first SPSS assignment, where it says mean, median, mode, standard deviation, minimum, and maximum. If you have any questions about what needs to be included for descriptive statistics for your paper, please let me know at any point in time. And again, look for those instructions starting November 10th. I'm also happy to set up an individualized Zoom meeting with anyone to go over what those instructions expect and help you with any data set questions or issues you run into. And of course, this is also actually connected to one of our last discussions. It's the discussion for week 13. In that discussion, what I'm asking you to do is to take a look at your data set and your instructions. Start telling me at the beginning of that discussion and telling others what you'd first plan to do and then what you're actually being asked to do with the fake data set. So part 1 of that discussion, tell us what you'd plan to do. Part 2, what did you plan to do and how does that look with your fake data set? And then Part three, are you understanding what you need to do? Part four, what are the challenges you're encountering? All of this intended to, again, help you work through that final paper and make it a very successful activity and practice for you. Okie dokie, everybody. We are done for today. Intense 40 minutes of conversation about ANOVAs and our assignments that are coming up. Please do reach out if you have questions or concerns at any point in time, and I will get back to you as soon as I can. And do seriously consider setting up a Zoom meeting if you're feeling any kind of like extreme stress or pressure about this course. It's best to address it early rather than waiting until, let's say, study week or finals week to let me know of that. I will do my best, again, to support and help you as much as I can, but it's always better to have more time to work together than less. So I would encourage you to contact me soon if you do have those concerns. And in the meantime, keep up the great work. I know it's a lot to do this course online or even to be listening to these podcasts outside of class. If you're just supplementing with listening to the podcasts and attending class in person, I really do appreciate the commitment. And I hope that this is working as an effective tool for you. And on that note, I hope you all have a great rest of your day, week, weekend, evening, wherever you're at. And I will catch up with you again one more time to talk about regression analysis.